WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What a beautiful Thursday it is, and I am so glad and honored that you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your Thursday afternoon. A stacked show in store for you. On today's Current Sports, I chat with the head coach of the Hazlitt girls tennis team, Henry Brunschweiler. Matt, Alex, and I will also chat about the Stanley Cup Finals, the NBA All-Team selections, and also bring you Throwback Thursday and so much more. But before we get to all of that action, you know what's coming next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
I'm Matt Ludke, and here are today's Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Thursday, June 5th. What's new, folks? The Tigers have lost yet again. Last night, they fell in Game 2 of a three-game series with the Toronto Blue Jays, 8-2. Miguel Cabrera and Ian Kinsler homered for Detroit, but Kinsler also left the bases loaded twice. The AL Central leading Tigers left 11 runners on base in their fourth consecutive loss. Detroit has now dropped 12 of their last 16. The Tigers are back in action today at home. A 1:08 p.m. first pitch. We will keep you updated throughout today's show on the final game of the series. In Lions news, the Detroit Lions gave second-round pick Kyle Van Noy quite the gift 3 days before his wedding, his first NFL contract. Van Noy posted a picture of him signing his contract on Twitter along with the caption, "It's official." Van Noy sat out organized team activity workouts earlier this week with a back injury and is set to wed his longtime girlfriend, former Miss Utah Marissa Powell, on Saturday. The Lions now have one pick in the draft left to sign, first-rounder Eric Ebron. In Michigan football news, new details are emerging on the Graham Glasgow incident. The starting center for the U of M football team had a .13 blood alcohol content when he was arrested in March for driving under the influence, according to the incident's police report. The report shows Glasgow failed multiple field sobriety tests and blew a .11 BAC on a preliminary breath test at the scene of his arrest. A later test showed his BAC increased to .13. He is charged with misdemeanor operating a vehicle while intoxicated, and the maximum penalty for that crime is 93 days in jail or a $500 fine. Glasgow is currently free on a $1,000 personal recognizance bond. He's prohibited from drinking, using drugs, or leaving the state by the terms of the bond. In brighter Michigan football news, former USC running back Ty Isaac is transferring to the Wolverines, picking Michigan over the likes of Northwestern and Illinois. Isaac, a Shorewood, Illinois native, is transferring from USC to be closer to his mother, who suffered complications stemming from a recent surgical procedure to correct hearing loss. Isaac will seek a hardship waiver to be eligible to play this fall, though current rules state he must attend a school within 100 miles of his home, and Ann Arbor is 259 miles from Shorewood. In hockey action, the LA Kings rallied from a two-goal deficit to win Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals 3-2 over the New York Rangers. Justin Williams scored the OT winner after Rangers defenseman Dan Girardi turned the puck over in his own zone. New York jumped out to a two-goal lead, which was erased early in the second period. Game 2 is Saturday in Los Angeles. In basketball news, the all-NBA teams were announced yesterday with familiar faces leading the way, Kevin Durant and LeBron James. The MVP and runner-up were joined by Chris Paul, Joakim Noah, and James Harden on the all-NBA first team. Second-team all-NBA selections were Spurs guard Tony Parker, Warriors guard Stephen Curry, Clippers forward Blake Griffin, Rockets center Dwight Howard, and Timberwolves forward Kevin Love. Trailblazers guard Damian Lillard and forward LaMarcus Aldridge, Suns guard Goran Dragic, Pacers forward Paul George, and Bobcats center Al Jefferson were third-team selections. The 2016 NFL Championship will be known as Super Bowl 50 instead of the Roman numeral Super Bowl L. The NFL drew up many logos and agreed the number 50 had more appeal. It's the first time a Roman numeral has not been used in a Super Bowl since the first championship in 1967. The San Francisco 49ers and quarterback Colin Kaepernick have agreed to terms on a multi-year contract extension that will keep him with the Niners through 2020. The deal is a six-year extension, averaging over $21 million per year with a $61 million guarantee for a total of $126 million. The contract includes the highest guaranteed money for any NFL player. And in baseball news, legend and icon Don Zimmer has passed away at the age of 83. Zimmer was a senior advisor for the Tampa Bay Rays and is most notable for playing alongside Jackie Robinson on the Brooklyn Dodgers World Series championship team. He was also a former manager, coach, and mentor around the big leagues. That ends your current Sports Quick Hit headliners for today, June 5th. We'll now send it back to Al to start the show.
All right. Thanks a lot, Matt. Also want to note that tonight is the night. Of course, after getting rained out yesterday. It was raining pretty much all day yesterday. It really kind of cleared up near the end of the day. But the Diamond Classic was rained out in the finals, of course, which was supposed to take place at 7 p.m. down at Cooley Law School Stadium, home of the Lansing Lugnuts. It was supposed to take place yesterday, but has now been rescheduled for today. So tonight, at 7 p.m., Charlotte and the powerhouse that they call the Grand Ledge Comets, Pat O'Keefe's powerhouse, if you will be playing each other to see who takes home the Dean Shippey Diamond Classic title. That's going to be exciting stuff. I'll be down there. You can catch the highlights and so much more of that one, post-game reaction and so much more of that one on next week's Current Sports TV show. How about that? Again, Current Sports TV will tape next week, Wednesday. I'm excited. I'll be sitting down with Martine Cleaves. Yes, the former MSU famed point guard who has now gone on to become a pretty good NBA analyst for Sirius XM Radio and, of course, for the Detroit Pistons with the Fox Sports Detroit TV network, and is going to do some great things, great charity work. He's always got his hand in the community doing some great charitable events. I'll be sitting down with Martine Cleaves. You can sign up to be a part of that live studio audience again next week, Wednesday at 6 p.m. right here on the campus of Michigan State University inside of the Communication Arts and Sciences building at the WKRTV studios and Studio F. Be a part of that audience by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. Well, as you see, as Matt just kind of ran down our quick hit headliners, there's so much to talk about and so little time. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, I'll be talking with a team, a head coach of a team who has been really just making headway these past few months and throughout their entire season when it comes to their success. Henry Brunschweiler, who is the head coach of the Hazlitt girls tennis team, who finished up a pretty remarkable season. Henry was actually, pretty cool story behind this, because Henry was actually one of the first coaches, one of the very first coaches that I covered in high school sports as I was an intern for Home TV, which is, for any of you that knows Home TV, it's in Meridian Township in the city of Okemos, which is not too far from Lansing, of course. And they do a pretty cool internship program where they actually allow students who are in college that, you know, want to, you know, get valuable experience in the world of broadcasting, whether it be in the news area, the sports area, behind the camera, in front of the camera, production wise. I mean, it's a really cool internship program where all of your material that you shoot and stories that you compile together is aired on TV. So I was an intern there at Home TV for a little over a year, and I was doing news and sports at the time. And for the show All Access, which I used to co-host with now Channel 6 sports reporter and anchor Audrey Dahlgren, we had a show called All Access where we would go out in the community and cover high school sports and beyond, of course, MSU sports as well. And one of the very first features on a team that I did happened to be the Hazlitt girls tennis team and head coach Henry Brunschweiler. He was a really cool guy and has really turned around this Hazlitt girls tennis team to be one of the best in the area and one of the best in the state. And if you've been following them this entire season, they had one remarkable season, had some great outings, some great players on that team. And under Henry's leadership, they just continue to get better year after year. So I'll be talking with Henry at the 1:15 mark. You don't want to miss that. And I got some stuff to get off my chest, folks. Of course, we'll talk about the Stanley Cup Finals. How about that game last night? If you want to start, if you could write a start to a championship series, you couldn't have wrote one better than last night's game. An overtime winner from the LA Kings as they win a thriller over the New York Rangers and did it in a pretty cool style. Again, an overtime game. That's the way you want to start a series, folks. And Justin Williams, how clutch has this man been? Mr. Game 7, that nickname suits him very, very well. Another clutch outing for him. Again, I call him the Robert Horry of the LA Kings, because when you need a goal, when you need somebody to come through, you can pretty much guarantee that Justin Williams is going to come through for you. And he did it last night, scoring in OT, the OT winner, after Rangers defenseman Dan Girardi. He turned the puck over in his own zone. It was a great moment, a great start to that series, so we'll kind of talk about that one as well. And again, I got to get off my chest the just terrible, for me, looking at the all-NBA teams that were announced, as Matt kind of just ran down, I had a problem with a few of those picks. Really rubbed me the wrong way. I'm just sitting there shaking my head like, really? I just didn't understand it. And I'm going to kind of break down the problems that I had with the all-NBA team list. Again, if you disagree with me or if you got any thoughts on it or anything that we talk about here on the show, of course, our phone lines are going to stay open throughout this entire hour from 1 to 2 o'clock, folks. 517-355-9527. You also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. We'll have Throwback Thursday in store for you, as Matt will kind of run down what happened on this Thursday in the world of sports. And how about this whole Graham Glasgow case? Interesting stuff. You know, for me, it's interesting because it's just another case of a college athlete acting like a college student, you know, just really just losing his mind. If you read the full report, you see that he was also accompanied during this whole incident with a U of M volleyball player. She was hanging half out the window, you know, yelling things to pedestrians, and all of a sudden, he gets pulled over, gets arrested, and things hit the fan. And, you know, we've talked about it countless times here on the show, countless incidents from college athletes just doing relatively stupid things, and you got to carry yourself in a certain manner once that target is on your back and once you are a college athlete. So we'll talk about all of that and so much more. Again, our phone lines will be open throughout this entire hour, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, if you're at work and you can't pick up the phone and dial, hey, use that work computer and put it to use on Current Sports by going to facebook.com/currentsports and leave us a comment on anything we talk about today. Would love to get your thoughts, and I'll read it right here on the air. So how about that? Okay, well, let's invite our guest for today's Current Sports. Again, he is a man who is the head coach of a team that had some really head-turning success this season, has been for quite some time now. The Hazlitt Girls Tennis Team is a squad that showed just how ahead of the pack they really are in the CAAC Red Conference this year. It's my pleasure to welcome, again, one of the very first high school coaches I covered in Mid-Michigan when I was an intern back in the day, Henry Brunschweiler. Welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, Henry?
Here's my question. Can I send a shout out to
him? Hello? Do we have him?
Yep, I can hear you.
Gotcha. What's going on, Henry?
Nothing much. Just wrapping up the end of the school year.
And you are actually in class right now teaching.
Say that again?
You are actually in class right now teaching, right? We appreciate the time.
Yeah, no problem. My kids are excited to know that I was doing that.
Oh, that's great stuff. Now, Henry, first of all, again, you've had some great success over the years with this Hazlitt tennis team. Just looking at, you know, last year, winning a regional championship and ultimately finishing eighth in the state, how have you been able to build this program to where it is now, Henry?
You know, that's a great question. Now, just real quickly, you know, just to give you a background on tennis in the Lansing area, it's been like a lot of the tennis moon in the United States has started picking up around the 70s. And over the last couple of years, with all the diverse sports out there, lacrosse being an obvious one that's been added into schools, tennis is kind of like a lot of sports, worked real hard to kind of keep things moving with participation, involvement as kids start to diversify and play other sports. So the biggest thing for me as a coach is I have to understand that my athletes play other sports, that they have other responsibilities. A lot of them are top-notch students, and you got to just be able to find the balance. And so I think what kids are looking for now is a coach who's willing to put in a good amount of time and work and effort but also is realistic about their time. And they give you a lot of effort if you can find ways to balance your demands and all the demands in their life. So I found that's been a successful formula, just being flexible enough to understand that everything doesn't have to be about our sport, giving them a little rope to do other things as well.
Yes, and understanding certainly lends a lot of perspective, and that's a great take on that. And I got to ask you, where did your passion for the game of tennis come from, Henry?
Can you repeat that?
Where did your passion for the game of tennis come from?
You know, I grew up playing every sport. I loved soccer and basketball. Tennis is an individual sport, and anyone who's ever played team sports, there's just a joy when you play a team sport you can't explain, but all of a sudden, when you play an individual sport, it's very different. It's you against one other human being, and I really like that. I like the challenge in tennis of being able to just confront one other person. There's no team. There's no plays. There's no nothing around. It's just one-on-one, and so that's kind of where the passion stirred. And then I played a lot growing up, and I really enjoyed the game, so I became a school teacher, and I wanted to share that knowledge with others as well.
You know, Henry, you kind of alluded to it in your first answer here, you know, talking about how you have to also understand that your girls are also playing other sports and are involved in so many other extracurricular activities. But I got to ask you, do you feel as though, looking at where the success of this program is now, that the popularity of girls tennis has grown at your school of Hazlitt High School? And do you see more and more girls trying to be a part of your team?
Yeah, it's definitely grown. When I started coaching here, it was the year 2001, and we are just an average program. And that was mainly because they just had not, it was kind of newer as a sport in the district. And I think what's really improved the game is, one, consistency. You need someone who, in any high school sport, who is there from year to year. And the other thing is, you know, you have to get a commitment from players. So I think as some of the parents in the community have seen that our program has started to build, their faith has gone into it, and we get a lot of positive feedback. For instance, we got a summer camp starting in a couple weeks, and I expect a decent amount of kids for that. So it takes a little bit of everything. You need to be a little bit successful, and then parents need to hear good word of mouth about how you treat kids, the fairness in the program. That all can help build it.
You know what, Henry, going back now to 2001, when you became the head coach of this team, I mean, what were your goals? Where did you want to, you know, equate this team to in the future? And have you met those goals as far as yourself as a coach?
You know, when I first started coaching, my first goal, like I think all coaches are, is just to share something you love and try to build a little success with it. Sometime around the late 2000s, around 2008, 2009, we started just getting better players, more interest. And once I got a couple stronger players and the combination of that, the effort to build it, I could start moving forward. But I have to tell you, Al, we've exceeded the goals I set originally. This year we were ranked number 9 in the state. Last year we finished 8th. A couple years before that we finished 5th. Prior to that, we either never made the state tournament or finished somewhere 15th, 16th, 17th. So we've really reached a point now where we have become a much stronger program. And again, a lot of that has exceeded some of the personal goals I had. You know, really now my next goals are to maintain the success we have and try to even build off that a little bit.
You know, and that was my next question here, Henry. When you talk about the first time you guys really had that an outstanding season and had the success that was really eye-opening for you, how do you duplicate that success from year to year to year to consistently bring out the best in these girls?
You know, that's a great question, and I think all coaches have to find different ways. I'm not going to lie to you. Number one, you have to have the talent. There's no high school coach that can coach without talent, no coach at any level.
Right.
The NBA finals are going on right now, and as good as those players are, they still need to be coached and managed and things. So, and, you know, the talent they have. So a lot of it, you know, the talent has to be good. And then the other other big key when you start looking at how those – how you continue to improve your goals is you just have to be driven. So I do have to put in a little extra time in the summers. I like to work with some of my athletes and help build their confidence. And a lot of coaches, as you know, in a lot of sports, spend a ton of extra time working on helping others. You know, every school has coaches like that. They just spend far and above beyond what they have time to do, they do to help. So that's the other side. You need a little talent, but you also need to make the commitment. Parents need to see that you're a good person, that you're committed, that you're fair. And then, you know, you can help build those programs.
Now, Henry, before I get into this year's success with your incredible squad, you know, you talk about that coaching that you have to do and kind of have you got to give that individual time to each player. tennis being such an individual sport, I'm always curious to ask a coach like you who coaches a individual sport ideally, you know, and always I love to talk to golf coaches about the same thing and boxers and so on and so forth. But with that individual aspect to it, even though you guys still are a unified squad, how does that aspect affect your coaching style and what makes it different from other sports?
Now, could you repeat that very last part? I apologize.
Yo, you're totally fine. I just wanted to wonder, you know, with tennis being such an individualized sport where, you know, your girls are going out there and competing one-on-one with other teams, how does that individualized aspect of things affect your coaching style? And what makes that different from other sports?
That's a great question. I had a girl this year, Shay Donahue, is one of the top players in the state. Finished in the top four in Division III. She's going to play at Saginaw Valley. A fantastic player. At the banquet, I actually kind of pinned that same question on her. I said, what is it about tennis, even though you're an individual, what is it about being part of a team that makes it so exciting or makes it? I think part of it is, you know, you have to drive an individual. So for someone like Shay, you got to help her keep her focus and keep her goals in mind, and then just show her that you're supportive as well. I think as an individual sport, it's very different. And let's just use basketball as an example. I can coach plays. I can coach a defensive philosophy, a style. Tennis, it's more about you have to teach them to be able to think and adjust. And it's almost like they're playing and they're waiting to see what happens and they have to understand how to read and react. And so a lot of tennis, you have to kind of hone that skill in. And some kids are much better than picking up on it than others. And some kids you have to work on longer and they just have to gain that experience.
That is so true. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with the head coach of the Haslett girls tennis team, Henry Brunschweiler. Now, Henry, you all tied with Williamson for the Division III team title in the regionals, moved on to the Division III state tourney. Were your expectations met or exceeded this season for your squad?
You know, we definitely met our expectations. Our goal was to win our league tournament, which we did. It was the last year of the CAC Red. Next year, the Lansingers is going to some new leagues, and we won that. We were able to tie for first with Williamson, who has a fantastic team. We got to the state tournament. We scored 8 points, which was – we finished 12th place, which is not exactly where we wanted to finish, but there was 3 new additional teams of Division III this year who were outstanding. Mm. And Williamson has the premier player in the state of Michigan, a girl who plays number one named Sarah Davatilla. And I was very happy that Haslett and Williamson were able to go to the Division III state tournament and be successful. The Williamson girl ended up winning the Division III state title. She ended up beating a girl who had never lost a match in high school. It was her senior year, her last match in high school.
Oh, wow.
And the Williamson girl took her down. The young lady she defeated is going to Michigan next year to play on a full ride.
Oh, my goodness. She's pretty good.
Yeah, she is a nationally ranked player, so she's one of the premier players in the United States.
Oh, boy, that is something else. And you know what?
Here's why I'm proud of our team. When you have a player that good at Williamson, we had other girls on our team that were able to equal their team score as well in the regional.
Right. Right. That is so – and you know what? You brought up a name I want to really kind of dive into here. And just the overall leadership of this team here, Henry. You know, I want to ask you, what players really became the anchors for this team? Because, you know, looking at players like senior NCAAC Red Champion Shay Donahue, who at one point had a 16-0 start, unbelievable stuff. It seemed like the leadership was really there this season for this squad.
You know, one of the things when you ever you coach is leaders emerge in different areas. Shay was definitely one of them. We had other girls, some seniors, some not seniors, who ended up being leaders. It starts with the coach. You have to set a good example. My wife and I are actually the co-coaches, and my wife does an incredible job of developing a very positive relationship with the team. And I'm kind of the loud one who gets in there and kind of brings the energy. And I think between the two of us, we kind of set that tone. And I got to give our team a lot of credit. A lot of the girls really step up during the season, and they kind of help carry that leadership to the other players on the team. And I thought it was important this year. I did a few times, you know, establish what our goals were. And it's all talk when the coach does it. The girls got to go out and do it. So they showed a lot of leadership by trying to achieve those goals.
That is really cool. So your wife co-coaches with you on the squad. Has she been doing that since 2001?
Yeah, no, we actually met. I was a coach and she was a head coach for another school. And we met and we started dating and eventually we married and she was hired into the same school district as me, so she is a counselor at Haslett High School, and I teach middle school at Haslett Middle School. eighth grade at Heslett Middle School, and we both coach the tennis team. And it's a great balance. We both bring strengths that are very different from each other, and it works out really well.
Oh, that is great stuff. See, we just don't talk about sports here on Current Sports. We also talk about love. That's great stuff, Henry.
You know, I appreciate it.
At the dinner table, are you guys always constantly talking about the team, or you guys kind of have to take a step back?
We spend a lot of time planning, going over options, thinking about possibilities. We do spend a ton of time doing that, and it's really helpful. If I was doing this on my own or I was not married to my co-coach, it'd be much more difficult to get those things done. So that's a huge advantage we have over other schools when we coach.
Oh, that is great stuff, Henry. All right, now shifting gears, before I let you go here, Henry, now correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys are moving from the CAAC Red next year, right?
Correct.
How do you think this will affect the team in any way?
You know, we're going to add in a couple other local teams, Mason being one. That Mason has a very strong tennis program as well. Their coach, Jim D'Angelo, works real hard to get their team up to par. And I think it's going to make it a little bit more challenging. But I think, you know, that's just kind of not only in high school, but looks like colleges too, these super conferences where you're starting to build, create more teams. So I think that's just kind of the way things are going to be in coaching now. We all have to coach a little bit in a little bit different style, but you know, the goal is still the same. Try to teach your kids a fun life skill. And then if you can win and be successful, that's great too.
And Henry, what conference will you guys be moving to?
Yeah, I don't want to answer that only because I don't want to get it wrong. It's definitely just a remodified form. I thought it might be the CAC Gold they're renaming, but I might be wrong. So I don't want to throw that answer out.
Gotcha. Now, you know, you guys have been competing in the Red for quite some time now. Henry, what will you miss about competing in this conference?
Yeah, there's some really nice teams and coaches. Fowlerville, Ionia, Owosso, DeWitt. I don't want to leave anyone out. I know I'm leaving someone out, but, you know, these schools, there's some really great coaches. I got to tell you, I've, you know, talked to a lot of the girls in those teams. There's a lot of good kids. It's really enjoyable working with those people. And not that some of these schools won't be there, but some schools will be moved out. And so we'll probably miss some of the coaches and some of the real nice kids we met in those communities.
All right, Henry, before I let you go, what are you looking forward to from this team next season? Who are some players that we should look out for?
Next year, we're going to have a couple top-notch players, Hannah Vogelsang, who is currently a 10th grader, and Allison Granfield, who is currently an 11th grader. They're very strong singles players, and I anticipate they'll be moving up in the lineup. Brooke Hartsuff, who's a junior as well, strong player. And we also have some underclassmen and others who play in the doubles lineup. That I think will have to show definitely some improvement, but are excited and ready to improve. Mary Kate Martell, Claire Cowan, Courtney Defoe, Emma Kruger, Kendall Rosenbaum, and some others. I hate to forget anyone, just going off the top of my head.
So you guys are still pretty stacked then. Man.
I feel pretty good. I think I'm going to have to work hard this summer to make sure our goals are stay maintained, but I feel pretty good.
The work never stops. There you have it. Head coach of the Heslett girls tennis team, Henry Brunschweiler. Henry, thanks so much for joining me today on Current Sports.
Al, I didn't listen. Al, I got a quick question for you. Who's got in the NBA Finals?
Oh, boy, you know I'm a big NBA guy. Actually, that's a good segue to our next segment because I'm going to be breaking down kind of, you know, the NBA All-First team really rubbed me the wrong way. But we'll save that for the next segment. But if I had to choose, we chose here on the show before the series started, and I'm going with the Spurs in 7 games, Henry.
You're taking the easy way. I'm going to go Heat in 6. I don't think they're going to let it get back to San Antonio.
Really? You think the Heat are going to put this? That's not a bad pick. Either way.
I think I keep hearing all about how great the Spurs are, but no one's talking about how Dwayne Wade's feeling a lot better, how Chris Bosh isn't in the slump anymore.
Gotcha.
No one's talking about some of that stuff. So I think there's factors on both sides people have to acknowledge. And I got to tell you, I'm not going to bet against LeBron James.
That is a safe bet, Henry. So are you a big LeBron fan?
I'm a big NBA fan. I've literally followed the NBA since the early 80s and big fan. I do admire LeBron James a ton.
Oh, boy. Well, I tell you what, Henry, we'll definitely chop it up more about the NBA. NBA is my love. So we'll talk in the future about it.
We'll catch up another time.
Definitely, Henry. Hey, thanks a lot for joining me today, Henry.
All right, Al. Have a great day. Thanks for calling.
You do the same.
Yeah, bye.
All right, folks, let's hit the first break. When we come back, Henry just alluded to it. We'll talk about the NBA. The All-NBA teams were announced this week. We'll talk some Stanley Cup Finals and Throwback Thursday. All of that and so much more. Hey, stick around. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, now joined by Alex Lucky and Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky. My goodness, tongue-tied here today, tongue-tied as you see. Great talking with Henry Brunschweiler. We just finished wrapping up an interview with him. He is the head coach of the Hazlitt girls tennis team. They had one unbelievable season. Always a great time talking with Henry. But now we shift gears and we'll start this segment by talking a little hockey. Yes, the Stanley Cup Finals are underway now. Game one was last night, and what a game was it, folks. The LA Kings, they rallied from a two-goal deficit. I remember flipping through channels and seeing that. I'm like, oh, well, you know, looks like New York has this one. All of a sudden, you know, the Kings, they rallied back to end up winning in overtime, 3-2 over the New York Rangers. Oh, that's, if you want a start, you know, a riveting start to the Stanley Cup Finals, that's the kind of start you want. It was great TV, folks. Gotta love that stuff. And you know, it was pretty cool watching, you know, the aerial views from New York and looking at the Staples Center and how packed it was. Man, was it an atmosphere that was off the chain last night, Matt.
Absolutely. And, you know, more so than just the fact that it was an overtime game.
Yeah.
It was a, you know, beyond that, it was a legitimately great game. These two teams are so fast. The you know, overall team speed for both squads is off the charts. I mean, I don't know how many breakaways Carl Hagelin had last night.
Right.
And Jonathan Quick was there every single time, except for, you know, it bounces off a defender's skate and goes in for New York's second goal. But the energy in the Staples Center was great. I mean, obviously, you don't really, you know, consider L.A. a great hockey town.
Yeah, they're not used to this kind of success because you saw the Staples Center was rocking.
Exactly. And, I mean, they won the Cup a few years ago, but they came out of nowhere that year. This year, they're a little more established, and people love them, and they play so well, and they never quit.
Never. You know, looking at that two, I mean, that's the thing, that two-goal lead, which, you know, Alex always talks about this, how, you know, a 2-0 lead in hockey is so dangerous because there's a level of complacency that is dangerous, that could settle in. And that's kind of exactly what kind of happened for New York. LA's aggressiveness, you know, in that third period was really key for me, Matt, because LA, they outshot New York in that third period 20-3. 20-3, that's unbelievable. Becoming the first team to get 20 shots in a finals period. And get this, folks, 16 years. That shows that this team wanted it. Even though they were down, they were not quitting. And how about, it's fitting, Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7 is what they call him. The kid is clutch. I mean, he's the Robert Horry of L.A. I mean, he was unbelievable. I mean, seeing that he made the goal, I'm sitting there like, no surprise. You know, that's what Justin Williams does. And, again, this is the kind of start you want to a series. It's going to be a fun – if every game is like this, it's going to be a fun series to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be a great series. And, I mean, Henrik Lundqvist for the Rangers, I mean, he made 40 saves. He almost stole it.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't get it done. I mean, 20 shots in the third period – is insane.
That's crazy.
And to have it, you know, part of your season is kind of hanging in the balance there, because game one is big. Obviously, you know, they have plenty of time to get back in the series, but game one was big, especially with the predicament they had with that two-goal lead that they gave up almost instantly. I mean, LA struck back after it was 2-0 in like 2.5 minutes.
Right.
And that's so key when you fall behind like that. You have to get something going. And once you do, it starts to roll. And I mean, they tie it up early in the second period, and then they kind of just, you know, a stalemate till the end. But L.A. Right. was clearly the better team as the game wore on.
Right,
and
right.
I think we're going to see that going forward in the series. If the Rangers somehow win, it's going to be Henrik Lundqvist that does it.
Right.
I mean, he is the series changer potentially.
Yeah.
But without him playing at an otherworldly level, I just don't see the Kings going down.
Yeah, it's really tough to see that. And you know what? That's why I say in hockey, anything can happen. No lead is comfortable, because especially if a team is just aggressive, if you're getting more shots on goal than the other guy, especially that, again, that third period was insane in the membrane. If you're the aggressor, you know, at one point or another, you know, that puck is going to find the end of the net. And that's exactly what happened last night. It was fun to watch. Alex, did you get a chance to catch it?
Yeah, I caught the first couple goals from the Rangers, and then I stopped watching. And I never thought that.
So you were like me then. I saw 2-0. I was like, okay, yeah. Well, let me turn the channel here.
Well, as a good omen for the Rangers, this came out last night from ESPN Stats Info. The Rangers lost game one of the 1994 Stanley Cup Finals 3-2 in overtime. So if that doesn't say a lot about what this series is going to be like, I don't know what else is. I mean,
kind of some superstitious flavor
there. Yeah, I mean, for the Rangers, it's a team that never really goes deep in the playoffs. They're finally here. The last time they were here, didn't really get it done. 1994, First game, they also lost 3-2 in overtime. The Kings are a better team on paper, and you're hoping that the Rangers can pull some playoff magic, like you said, that anything can really happen. But it proved last night. The Kings are really just a better team. They're more aggressive on the boards. Matt and I were talking about how much grinding they really do game in and game out, just on the boards, and they know how to attack the net. So
right.
For me, it seems the aggressor, when it comes to the finals, is going to be the winner.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know what? Some food for thought here. The Kings hadn't won an OT playoff game at home since May 6th of 2001, so quite some time. You're talking about 13 years there. So, I mean, they got to snap that. But it's going to be fun down the stretch. I think we all chose the Kings, did we?
I believe we did, unless yeah. Alex didn't. Did I'm not you? Sure, though.
No, we all chose the Kings.
I think we all did choose the Kings.
I think I chose them in six. You chose them in seven, I think, Al?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe
Matt chose
back and
Matt
check
chose again. Them in 6.
I think I took him in 6 too. Six.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun series to watch, but yeah. All right, guys. Well, I got to get this off my chest. Oh boy. I wanted to yesterday, but you know, it when it came out, we had so much to talk about on yesterday's show. I decided to kind of save it for today's show. The all NBA teams were announced yesterday. And just kind of give you guys a rundown of what those areas look like as far as the first, second, and third teams are concerned. On the first team, you got Kevin Durant. No surprise there. LeBron James, Joakim Noah, James Harden, and Chris Paul. Second team, Blake Griffin, Kevin Love, Dwight Howard, Steph Curry, and Tony Parker. And third team, Paul George, LaMarcus Aldridge, Al Jefferson, Goran Dragic, and Damian Lillard. A decent list here. If by decent you mean decently flawed, okay?
Uh-oh.
Because for me, I got a few areas I want to draw. I'm going to take this step by step here, guys, okay? First thing, I want to note that LeBron James was not a unanimous pick for first team. How? Why?
Chris Sheridan. He was the one guy.
Chris Sheridan, boy, you better watch your back, man. You're walking the streets. Because that makes no sense to me, how LeBron James is not a unit. This is the best player in the world. This is a no-brainer that LeBron James should be a unanimous pick for the All-NBA first team. Didn't get that. Didn't understand it. I don't know. I think Kevin Durant was. He was unanimous, but LeBron James wasn't. Okay, that's the first area I want to address. James Harden, first team. Seriously? Really? James Harden couldn't guard my grandma in backyard pickup basketball. The man plays absolutely no defense. He's worse than terrible. I mean, he's awful. He is pathetic. I mean, if you've seen him play out there, I mean, he's an offensive talent. He can do a lot with the basketball, but I've seen him. How many times have we seen James Harden just lazy? I mean, hands down, not even in a defensive stance. It's terrible. I just don't get how James Harden made that list. And this is another thing I want to address. How does a guy who missed a quarter of the season make the first team? And that guy that I'm talking about is Chris Paul. Now, don't get me wrong. Chris Paul is a great player, one of, if not the best point guards in the game. Now, I would probably say that Tony Parker, for me, is the best point guard in the game. But you can go tit for tat here. I mean, Chris Paul is pretty good. But he only played 62 games this year. Now, if you want to go stats-wise, he averaged fewer points per game than guard Stephen Curry, who made the second team, Damian Lillard, who made the third team, and Kyle Lowry, who made no team. So I just didn't get that. And really, the kind of to add insult to injury here, if you remember when Chris Paul was out, you know, a lot during this season, his team played extremely well when he was injured. You know, I just didn't get it, man. I mean, and Blake Griffin had an outstanding season. I kind of felt as though he got snubbed as well. All right, here's two more areas for you, Matt. Where in the world is Russell Westbrook on this list? Russell Westbrook, even though, you know, I've gone on record to say I'm still quite iffy on whether or not the Thunder will ever be able to win an NBA championship with Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant on the same team. I feel as though their games kind of butt heads, if you will, in many regards. You feel as though they will. Time will tell. But Russell Westbrook is still an unbelievable talent. He's so quick. He's so dynamic. He can shoot. He can take it to the hole. I don't get it. I didn't understand that one. And okay, Carmelo Anthony, I want to address this. Even though Carmelo Anthony is kind of been, you know, many people will argue that he's been an Achilles heel for the Knicks and he shoots too much and so on and so forth. The Knicks were terrible this year. I understand that. But if a team, you know, record factors into this, what's Kevin Love doing on the second team? You know, because the Timberwolves were terrible this season. Melo, in my opinion, was really better than ever this year. I thought, especially in regards when it came to rebounding, and he finally played some defense along with his offensive numbers. I don't understand why he wasn't on a second team or third team. I wouldn't put him on the first team, but why not give him on a third team maybe? I didn't understand that. And you know what? Really, when you look at this team, when we look at the list here, you're actually saying with Paul George, you're saying that Paul George is better than Melo, better than Dirk Nowitzki, and even Anthony Davis, right? Am I right? Because if he's on that squad and you look at those who are left off, that's basically what you're saying. George is so inconsistent. We saw it in the playoffs here. There's sometimes where he's not even the best player on the floor. We saw Lance Stephenson outplay him sometimes. He can score, but he doesn't distribute and gets by mostly by being a great defender. That's not enough. I'm sorry. I didn't understand it, Matt. I had to get that off my chest, man.
I'm happy you did. And you make some interesting points. I have to agree on LeBron not being unanimous. That's the most ridiculous thing probably that's on the list here in terms of your problems with it. Although James Harden making the first team is also pretty insane.
That's crazy.
I don't get that at all. In terms of Chris Paul, if you're going to say he can't make the first team for missing 20 games,
right?
I don't know how you can argue that Russell Westbrook should make any team. He only played in 46. So you have to pick one or the other there. You either say if you miss time to the injury, you're not eligible, or
right.
Or otherwise.
But I'm looking at what Russell Westbrook did when he was in, when he came in. I mean, he immediately.
But look what happened when look what happened when he was out. Kevin Durant went crazy, and they still won games anyway.
They did. But Russell Westbrook was immediately effective and showed that he is a supreme talent. It was hard to ignore how good Russell Westbrook was. Chris Paul at times this season, I mean, he wasn't as consistent enough for me. Okay. And again, when he was out, his team played better than when he was in. I didn't understand. And I think Blake Griffin, too. I mean, Blake Griffin had the best season. If anything, it's hard to, I mean, okay, Joakim Noah, I mean, he had a great, I mean, he's defensive player of the year this season. So, I mean, that really kind of solidified his place on that list. But Blake, I could see Blake on that first team, too. I could have went either way with that one. But still, I don't know. Okay, so go ahead.
No, they're definitely intriguing. And the inclusion of Paul George is also problematic, like you said. I mean, they had the most well-documented second-half swoon in recent NBA history.
Right.
I would have liked to see, you know, maybe, and I know you mentioned Melo, and he's certainly a candidate, but I didn't think he was terribly impressive. And the Knicks were supposed to be good. And Kevin Love and the Timberwolves, yeah, they struggled.
They were terrible.
But they play in the West. It's a different thing to be a bad team in the West than to be a bad team in the East, which was ripe for the taking.
It was bad.
I mean, it's just apples and oranges. So I think I can understand why Love made it over a guy like Melo. I would have liked to see Tim Duncan.
Yeah,
it's shocking that there's one Spur on this list.
It is. It's disrespectful. That's what it is.
It's crazy.
It really, and it just goes to show that, and I always felt this, in today's NBA, we glorify the superstars. We glorify the LeBron James and Kevin Durant and the superstars of the game. But we rarely look at the Spurs for who they really are. This is a team who plays basketball the right way. Not to sound cliche, I mean, they are the epitome of how a basketball team should play. They buy into team ball. You have your superstars on that team, but it's amazing because these are superstars who still are willing to make that extra pass to maybe the third string bench guy to hit that open shot. I mean, it's disrespectful. I totally agree with you. I don't know how Tim Duncan doesn't make that list either.
Yeah, it's just hard to see him left off. And another question for you, Al.
Yeah.
So let's take James Harden off the first team.
Yeah, which you should. Yeah.
Who replaces him?
That's a good question. If I had my choice here, I would probably go, and looking at the list here, I'm looking at the second team now because you had Blake, you had Kevin Love, Dwight Howard, Steph, and Tony. Now, I would possibly, maybe throw Russ in there.
On the first team?
On the first team.
You just throw him up to the first team. He missed half the season.
Yeah, he did. Wow. Or Steph. Why not throw Steph up
there? That is better.
Why not bump Steph?
And he's no defensive stalwart either.
No, he's not.
But at least he looks like he's trying.
Right.
Where James Harden, he hasn't guarded anybody since the 2012 finals.
Right.
I mean, he literally has not guarded anyone.
Nobody.
I could put up 15.
Exactly. Totally agree with you on there. But see, if I had to go with somebody, it would probably be. I love Rush so much. I'll put Steph up there. Okay. I would put Steph up there.
All right, Al. Okay. Couple things here.
Yeah.
Quick things.
Okay.
One. What I agree with you on it is Harden. I agree. I mean, he's fifth in scoring. I think he's like the second player to average 26, 6, and 5. He had some cool stats. But I agree. I don't think that he's first team worthy. I think there are other players that could be up there opposed to him. You've got Kevin Love. You've got Griffin. You've got Steph Curry could even bump up there. But when it comes to Chris Paul as point guard, as much as he missed a lot of games, I don't think there's anybody else that is the best point guard in the league.
Tony Parker. Tony Parker right now is hands down, the best point guard in the NBA. And I felt that way last season, too.
But you could argue that the Spurs just had a great team.
No, but Tony Parker, if you watch Tony Parker play, I mean, he's so set. He can score when needed. He is a great facilitator.
You could argue that Chris
plays
Paul,
defense.
If it wasn't for Chris Paul,
no,
the Clippers wouldn't be where they are
tonight. Let's not forget, though, when Chris had that bad – remember that – we all know the Chris Paul game I'm talking about here. Was it the Golden State series? When he just kind of went blank? You know?
No, it was OKC.
It was the OKC
series
where he just kind of went – what in the world was he doing?
You don't weigh the NBA first team off playoff performance.
But you weigh it over an overall performance throughout an entire season.
Exactly.
Tony Parker's body of work. He played more games, first of all, and he was more consistent with how he performed throughout an entire season.
I'd say I agree. No, sure.
And let's not forget, I mean, it's back-to-back finals appearances for him. They're the best team in the Western Conference. I mean, come on.
I agree. He was more consistent. But Chris Paul is just a better point guard.
Who would you attribute to the Clippers' success?
Would you attribute?
Did you see Blake Griffin this season? Blake Griffin.
So you think Blake?
It's the reason why Blake Griffin is on the second team.
So you think Blake Griffin is the reason why the Clippers?
But
are
it's
successful?
Part of the reason.
Not Chris Paul.
Part of the reason that those two hand in hand were the reason that they were successful
without
this
Chris,
season. Without Blake Griffin, the Clippers don't come near the success they had this season. Blake Griffin I think Blake Griffin deserves the most improved player award, because looking at how Blake Griffin improved this season on his jump shot, his post-game ability, his defense, he improved in every single area. And it's the reason why he's on the second team. And there were arguments out there that he should have made the first team. If Joakim Noah wasn't defensive player of the year, I think that Blake Griffin would have made that first team, without a doubt. But Chris Paul, for me, he doesn't have the accolades of a Tony Parker yet, which he will get, I think. He's bound to win a championship. But for me, Tony Parker on a championship team like the Spurs, and looking at their consistent success, Tony Parker, for me, as a point guard, has no weaknesses. You would never see Tony Parker make the kind of mistakes in the playoffs that Chris Paul did in
that OKC
series.
Chris Paul played less games. He led the league in assists. Sixth player ever to reach 6,000 assists.
But still,
he still set the highest records in the league without playing as many games. And you're telling me
Tony Parker is on the best team in the Western Conference, and is the one of the key factors to that team being successful.
He has great players. That was my original point.
Chris Paul has great players too.
He has some, but not as great as Tony Parker.
The thing that I would argue is that Chris Paul is a better leader than Tony Parker. Tony Parker is not the leader of that team. Tim Duncan is the leader of that team.
I think there's multiple
Chris
leaders of that
Paul
team.
Chris Paul is the alpha dog in L.A. Yes.
Tony Parker is all – you're telling me Tony Parker's not a leader on the Spurs team?
He's not the leader.
Alpha
he's not
yeah.
the leader.
Exactly. Because
a
the
leader,
Spurs are
absolutely.
A team. Because
yeah,
the Spurs
sure,
are a team. There's
and that's what makes him so great. But right. But I don't think you can count that against Chris Paul, that he doesn't have as good of a supporting
Paul.
Cast.
Okay, the mistakes that I've seen Chris Paul make in clutch moments – I've never seen Tony Parker make.
But they're not weighing that.
Never.
They don't weigh about the mistakes and clutch moments. That's not part of the formula.
That is a part of what you're voting for.
No, it's not.
How you perform in those moments also go into the minds of those voting. You can't tell me that. Come on now. That's a no. Tony, just watch what Tony Parker does in this finals. Trust me. He's going to show you what a championship point guard looks like. Chris Paul he's still rough around the edges.
If that's the case, then Matt Stafford on the line is one of the top five quarterbacks in the league because he gets the top five accolade.
This doesn't even make sense. That makes no sense what you're saying right now.
It completely does. You're saying that of course they should weigh clutch moments, but if Matthew Stafford is such a great quarterback, we all know about all the clutch moments he screws up. But If you look at his pure stats, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And that's how they weigh it.
Well,
they,
how does that NBA, have anything to do?
Because NBA doesn't look at the clutch moments. They don't look at
the
times.
The voters look at
that. They don't look at the fact
about?
That someone didn't make the playoffs. If they're looking at if you made the playoffs or not, Joakim Noah wouldn't be in the first team.
Alex, I'm saying that when you're voting for who should make the first, second, and third team for the All-NBA list, there are multiple I'm not saying that's the end-all, be-all factor because obviously when it comes to winning, Kevin Love made the dang list, for goodness sake. But there are all these factors that weigh in as far as your stats go, as far as your consistent productivity over an entire season goes. The success of your team is also factored into that. There's multiple things that go into the minds of these voters. And you saw one voter who didn't even vote for LeBron James as a unanimous first team selection. So you don't there's so many factors that go into. You never know what's going through the minds of these players. But I just think that Tony Parker being on a team like the Spurs, who I pronounced dead before this season started, and to look at Tony Parker's, again, his body of work throughout this entire season, to consistently just, the way he facilitates, the way he can score, his overall smarts of the game, there is no other point guard that has that experience and the accolades as a Tony Parker. And he's the best point guard. He's a point guard on a team that's in the finals back-to-back years. How is he not the best point guard in the league? I just don't get that.
They just don't weigh about the finals.
Keep
they don't
short.
Weigh it.
That winning is also a factor in this, Alex. And I'm just saying, you have to look at that aspect of things. I don't know. We could debate. That should be our current sports question of the day. Who is the best point guard in the NBA? I feel as though Tony Parker is. Chris Paul is second. I will put him second, but he's not there yet. For me to call Chris Paul the best point guard in the league, I got to see more consistent productivity from Chris Paul. Because I watched him the entire season. There were moments down the stretch where Chris Paul just didn't have it.
Just I feel like you're focusing on like one game.
No, I'm not. I'm not focusing on throughout the season too. Throughout the season too, man.
Chris Paul's accolades, Al, are through the roof. If you look at it on paper.
Tony Parker's accolades
are through
Chris the roof.
Chris Paul would have similar accolades to Tony Parker had he been drafted by the Spurs and played there his whole career. Instead of toiling
possibly,
away in New Orleans.
Possibly, but we're in fantasy land. Well, I'm going on what exactly is reality right here. And right now,
so
Tony Parker.
So you're
going
to give Tony Parker the edge because he's won more championships?
That factors into the
How
argument.
How does that factor into the best
winning,
player this year? This year.
This year, Tony Parker
has not won an NBA title this year yet. That's not factored into this vote.
Tony Parker, when you compare Chris Paul to Tony Parker and his overall body of work, what he's done this season. This season, yes.
This season.
Look at where
so
his team
championships
is.
Nothing.
Look at where his team is right now. He's got his team in the NBA Finals, for goodness sake, right now. Where's Chris Paul at?
He's sitting at home eating nachos. That's fine, but he doesn't have Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Kawhi Leonard.
He's got DeAndre Jordan. He's got Matt Barnes. That's a championship caliber
Matt
team.
Barnes and DeAndre Jordan, you're going to mention the same sentence as Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili?
Well,
you're
saying
crazy.
He has the piece. They have the piece. You're telling me don't make excuses for the Clippers here. They had opportunities to win that OKC series. They had opportunity to be in the finals just as much as the Spurs did. But factors, you know, down the stretch in certain games.
But they're not, they don't worry about playoff performance in this voting.
I'm talking,
this is regular season now.
I'm talking, right now, looking at Tony Parker, if you look at the stats over the regular season too, Tony Parker is up there with the best in the league.
He does not have the clout that Chris Paul has as the ambassador to the NBA. He's not the NBPA president.
Stop
he didn't have
it.
To deal with Donald Sterling all year.
That's another subject. We won't get on that, which
could factor in.
It definitely could factor in.
But right now, as a player,
as a pure point guard, Tony Parker, I'm giving Tony Parker the leg up, Matt.
I don't know. I think outside shooting, Chris Paul is way more consistent.
No, with Tony, as far as driving to the hole and you know creating fouls, Tony Parker is more clever in that area.
Sure,
facilitating.
You're saying Tony Parker.
You're gonna say Tony Parker is a better facilitator than the guy who led the league in assists.
Yes, I will say that. Yes, without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
I don't think we're ever going to agree here.
We're not going to agree here. Tony Parker's the best point guard in the league. Without a doubt.
Just a quick note.
Yeah.
Really happy for Goran Dragic to make the third team. I know this is totally changing
the course of the
discussion, but people kind of are questioning that pick too.
Right.
And I don't know why. I thought he was brilliant all year. They lose Eric Bledsoe midway through the season, and they don't fall off like everyone thought they would. And the only reason that happened is because they had Goran Dragic to kind of right the ship. So I think he is a well-deserved, underrated player, even on the third team.
Yeah, nice point, Matt.
Yeah, and I you know, Goran Dragic, though, plus Damian Lillard, that's your third best backcourt, though, in the league? I don't know. I could see the argument why many people were kind of salty about Dragic not being on that list, excuse me. So
I don't know.
I could see that.
I would take him over John Wall or Kyle Lowry.
Mike Conley?
No.
I don't know. I could see the argument
of
that.
I guess, but I don't know. I don't know how you would pick Mike Conley over.
I could see definitely because that's basically what you're saying when you look at this, that Goran Dragic plus Damian Lillard is your third best backcourt. So I don't know.
It's a pretty tough backcourt to stop.
It is a tough backcourt. It's a dynamic backcourt.
It is.
But there's a lot of players in the league. If we could go on and on. All right, I got that off my chest. It's frustrating. I hate the NBA all-first team. I think they are overrated, to be honest with you, and people put too much harp on them. But you got to talk about them. And, hey.
No, now, okay, question for you. What has more value, all NBA teams or the all-star team?
I would say all NBA teams.
Right.
Because fans vote on the all-star team sometimes, and they vote people that don't deserve it, like Kobe Bryant. How is Kobe Bryant an all-star?
Right.
He hasn't played all year. He's been hurt all season. They vote him. Like, that's the reason why. In this, you have people who are supposed to know the game voting on this, and yeah.
I know you have problems with it, but for the most part, it's not a bad list. It's not terrible.
It's decent. I see some flaws with it, but it's a decent list, for sure,
but it's not like it's, you know, an abomination.
Yeah, well, I just had to.
I did like the huffing and puffing though.
Yeah,
it was good stuff.
All right, we got 3 minutes, man. What happened in this day in sports?
We got 3 minutes. Oh my gosh,
that's crazy.
Chris Paul debate took up a lot of time here. Okay,
it did.
Really quick. War Admiral and Count Fleet both clinched Triple Crown victories on this day, June 5th, in 1937 and 1943, respectively.
All right.
Back in 1952, Jersey Joe Walcott registered a 15-round decision over Ezard Charles in Philadelphia to retain the world heavyweight title. It was the first nationally televised sporting event. 1952, today. Boxing. 1963, the NHL held its first amateur draft ever. 21 players were selected. Montreal chose first and selected Gary Monahan. In 1967, the NHL awarded cities with 6 new franchises. That included the Minnesota North Stars, the Oakland Seals, who I wish still existed, the Los Angeles Kings, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Philadelphia Flyers, and the St. Louis Blues. In 1981, wouldn't be Throwback Thursday without Nolan Ryan. He passed early.
Yeah, you got to be kidding me.
It's unbelievable.
This is crazy.
He passes early win as the all-time walk leader in Major League Baseball with 1,777 walks at that time.
Nolan is playing this. This is conspiracy theory.
He was playing the long game way back in the 70s and 80s. All right, 1989. The Blue Jays lose their debut game in the Sky Dome against the Brewers. 1991, Brett Hull wins the Hart Trophy, becoming the first father and son team with his dad Bobby to win the MVP honors. 2011, I'm sure you remember this day fondly, the Detroit Pistons fire basketball coach John Kuster.
Oh, hey. Yes, John Kuster. How about that? Well, that was a nice feel. I'm still stuck on Nolan Ryan. This is kind of crazy
it's
here.
It's unreal.
Every Throwback Thursday, mostly, I'll say about 70% of the Throwback Thursdays we do has Nolan Ryan.
Even like not during baseball season.
Yeah, it's
he
crazy.
Somehow finds a way to get himself into Throwback Thursday.
Somehow, some way. This is crazy. All right. Well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in today's Current Sports. Thanks a lot to the Hazlitt Girls Tennis Coach, Henry Brunschweiler, for joining me today. Thank you for tuning in again with me, Al Martin on WKRE East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic Thursday. And as always, be easy, people.